Well, hi, everybody. I'm Bill Whittle here with my good friend Alfonso Rachel, and this is the Virtue Signal made possible by the new members at BillWhittle.com and the old members, of course. Zoe, today I thought we might take a look at something that's a little more topical in terms of pretty much daily news. I'd like to talk today about the issue of trust. You know, trust in people is definitely a virtue. You definitely want to be the kind of person who doesn't run around all paranoid and all the rest of it. But at the same time, you don't want to be so open-minded that your brain falls out, and I've been guilty of that too. So why don't we start with the kind of the downside of trust here. What do you think about people who don't trust anybody? You know, natural-born cynics, everybody's out to screw me. Everybody's out to take advantage of me. You know, that to me seems kind of like a pretty poisonous way to live.
Sure. Hey, man. And you know what? Just to make it even more interesting, man, and more fun, I'm going to do this whole panel with the shifty eyes, man. Can you trust me to give you?
No, I don't trust you at all. I'll probably edit this whole thing out and make it a monologue.
I don't trust you to do that. Okay, now trying to be cute, man. I forgot what you asked. But no, sure. No, it's a horrible way to live, man. And the thing is, and if I could take it back to the biblical perspective, the Lord tells us to trust in all things. Now, that sounds like a really naive way to live. It's like, God, are you serious? Are we supposed to trust in all things? You know, and he gives like the list of these things that you're supposed to do that are totally counterintuitive to us.
And like, for example.
But you know, when he talks about, you know, love in all things, hope in all things, trust in all things, and I'm like, I'm sorry, God, but I'm having a hard time hoping in things. I'm having a hard time in loving everybody. I'm having a hard time. God's like, no, you don't understand. I'm not telling you to trust in all things as in go to the door and answer it no matter who's knocking at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm not telling you to forego common sense. What I'm telling you is to not let fear govern your life. What I'm telling you is that if you trust me, I will bless you with common sense. I will bless you with a way through the desert to make sure that you're able to live your life not consumed with fear, not consumed with that cynicism, right? And when we live that way, Bill, it's being oppressed. You're oppressed by your own fears. You're oppressed by your own cynicism. That's not a healthy way to live. And like, you know, we talked about before, what God says about oppression. I do not like oppression. I do not want you to live in fear. I do not want you to live in doubt and cynicism and stuff like that. These things are oppressive.
Yeah, and they kind of stay with you every day. You know, I'm reminded of people. This is kind of a trust issue, although it reflects itself in a lack of trust. For example, I know some people who I know a woman whose husband does something fairly dangerous. He's a experimental pilot, and she would, this is many, many years ago, but she would basically live in fear every time he went out the door. Every time he went out the door, she had a pretty good feeling that he wasn't going to come back that day. And after she told me this, as I said, many years ago, I thought about this and I realized, you know, if you don't trust that things are going to turn out well that day, then really for her husband died every day. I mean, it's really what it came down to. She spent every single day living in a state of grief and anxiety and fear. She was trying to prepare herself for the shock of this coming, which was certainly more likely in the case of a test pilot back in those days than it is for your average guy. But nevertheless, it occurred to me that because she was so filled with doubt and not willing to trust that things would turn out okay, every day he left the house, as far as she was concerned, he died. She spent the whole day essentially grieving, preparing herself for the big shock that actually never came. But my point, I think, here is even if that shock were to come, even if she was to get the news that she had feared the most in the world, preparing yourself for it in that way doesn't lessen the shock, doesn't lessen the grief. And if she had done that, she would have had years of joy if she could only have trusted that the worst case scenario wasn't going to happen.
Indeed, man. I mean, you nailed it. If you're going to put your mind to something and you're going to put your energy into something, put that into celebrating the time that you have. You know, that's definitely going to be a better use of your time. And, you know, and, but the thing is, Bill, we remember the things that, you remember the things that cause us pain, you know, and these are things that's typical human behavior. You know, it's almost like, you know, the things that you're going to remember even later on. Somebody, you could be getting like, you know, somebody could be like, you know, doing massage therapy on some, you know, something like that. If they decided they wanted to stick you with a needle or something like that, that's the thing that you're going to remember, you know, later, later on. So we tend to prepare for the things that will hurt us, and we look for, ways to be able to deal with it when it comes up. The problem is that this solution is a lot of times is worse than the problem itself. So you don't want to do that and trying to prepare for it. Spend that time enjoying what you have.
Yeah. I'm just curious for you, how many positive comments on a video does it take to make up for one negative one? For me, I've done the calculations, about 3,400, I want to say. You know, it's just human nature. That's how we are. That's how we behave.
Yes.
So before we get to the other side of the trust issue, which is trusting too much, don't you find that the people who are most often telling you to trust them are the ones that are most trustworthy? And don't you also find that the people who are most perennially suspicious about getting ripped off, generally speaking, feel that way because they always seem to be thinking about ripping other people off?
Oh, that projection dynamic, man. And we definitely see a lot of that, you know, whether it's, you know, in your own personal relationships or business relationships, from that all the way up to government, definitely. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why people who are, if I may, you know, usually on the left wing of the spectrum, who have made a very lucrative living off of the government trough, that's exactly what they do. These people are not trustworthy. They have found ways, nefarious ways, to be able to make money. And to take that stigma off of themselves, they project it onto somebody else. One, because maybe they do have a guilty conscience, Bill, and they know that they're doing something wrong and they constantly have to cover it up. But the bottom line is that yes, and that's a big problem that we have today, Bill, is that people are getting people to trust them by default, by getting people to distrust others. This is a principle that is old as the Garden of Eden. Satan comes in. Hey, I'm going to get you to not trust this guy and you're going to trust me. Aha, you're dead meat now.
For those of you who are joining us late, I'm Honest Bill Whittle here with Straight Talk and Zoe Rachel, and we're talking about the issue of trust. So let's look at the other side of this. Let's look at the aspect of what can go wrong when you trust too much. I've certainly been guilty of that, and for a while I kind of took the beatings, you know, that you can get pretty badly hurt if you trust people too much, especially if you hand over too much control over your life to people who you trust. And for a while there, for a couple of decades, I kind of tried to turn that into kind of a virtue. You know, well, I'm not a cynical person and all the rest. But the fact of the matter is, you know, it was just plain stupid. Mm-hmm. There's an argument to be made that if you leave the money in a bank outside on the steps in big sacks with a dollar sign on it, and you have a sign that says no video surveillance, and somebody come takes that money. It's true that you didn't steal the money, but it's also true that you certainly abetted it, and you didn't protect yourself in the way that any reasonable person would. So, what do we say about people who find it difficult to doubt people? What do we say about people who are too trusting? My personal experience has been that the people who end up being too trusting are, generally speaking, extremely honest people. I still have a hard time believing, in some cases, that people are doing things just as calculatingly evil as they actually are. I just said, that can't be the explanation. No, it can't be. But it is.
And I guess it's that finder's keeper kind of thing when it comes to stealing that money off the steps with no video surveillance or anything like that. But
just borrowing it. I was gonna bring it back a little later.
These things are taught to us in our behavior. Once again, Bill, as early as the first pages, you got something that basically, well, a snake that comes in, a snake. And that's what we call people who deceive people. We call
that's
them
right,
snakes, right? When you see a snake, you're supposed to run, right? You know, it's like, you know, don't try to think that you can deal with it. But this over-trusting, you're going to trust something, trusting in something too much to an unhealthy end. And, you know, there's that principle of trust but verify. Right? We want to be able to trust our fellow man and stuff like that. Adam and Eve, that's okay, man. You want to be trusting, but verify. You might want to consult with your creator. He's right there, right? He's like, tag me in, bro. Tag me in. Mm-hmm. I'm going to leave this to you. You know, I've given you dominion. I'm going to trust you to make the right choice. All right. But in this, they trusted too much. They didn't verify. And then we get problems. And for some people, Bill, maybe it's just it's too much. There's really no excuse for it. But for some people, it's just too much energy to try to do all the calculations of whether they're going to trust or not. And maybe this all will just work itself out in the end. You know, one way or another, it's going to be complicated. And that's the complication that they choose.
Well, we wanted to make these shows about the current political situation as well, and we kind of needed to lay a little groundwork for that. What you just said about trust is really it. I think the people that trust too much tend to look at trust as kind of a binary thing. I either trust them or I don't. People who have had more experience in life understand that genuine trust is something that is built up over time. I'm going to allow the person, you know, this much doubt, this much latitude, and if they behave honestly and honorably, then I'll open that up a little bit more. And over time, you build trust in somebody, and then that can be a real foundation. But if you've gone to the trouble of building trust in somebody and they turn out to be false, that's actual real betrayal. Mm-hmm. And the reason I wanted to talk about trust today is this. We seem to be, certainly in the last couple weeks, coming out of this COVID thing. Cases are down 70 or 80%. In the first couple weeks of the pandemic, we were told 2 weeks to flatten the curve, stay at home, protect lives. And I said, yeah, I understood completely they didn't really have the authority to do that. And I didn't like granting the authority to do that. But in the first 2 weeks, which is coming up on a year now, it was March 18th for California, I thought, look, if this will work and we can save American lives by not overloading the hospital system with people who are in the hallways dying of COVID, and now people with heart attacks can't even get treatment, I was certainly willing to make that sacrifice. I trusted the public officials enough to do that, and I was willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, and I still am willing to give them the benefit of the doubt for the first month or two. But as we got into April and these cases didn't become anywhere near what they were certainly afraid they would be, when that hospital ship, Comfort, sails out of New York after only treating just a couple dozen cases, we find all these other precautions that hospital beds are empty. And nevertheless, the restrictions stayed in place. And in California, they got more severe. And more businesses are disappearing. And we turn to these officials who continuously give us conflicting information, but the one information that they never conflict on is do as we tell you. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to talk about trust today because I know I'm speaking for a lot of people when I say that my trust, not only in the government, which was shaky to begin with, but my trust in the entire idea of public health officials is pretty much evaporated now. And that can be really dangerous and really bad. How did we get there? And what do we do about it?
Trusting in the government is, it's the people too. We're all, you know, fallible human beings, man. And to put that kind of trust in the government, especially outside of their scope, is just not going to lead to a good thing. You know, we have our national motto, "In God We Trust," right? Mm-hmm. And it's on the thing that we see the most. Right? I mean, it's on our money. It's the thing that we want to see the most, right? And it's on our money to make sure that you understand that even in your money is not where your security is going to be, because even that can let you down.
Oh, right? That's really deep, man. That's actually really interesting.
You know, so it's
every,
like,
every single coin you try to gather is telling you, don't put your trust in gathering coins.
That's right. You know, trust in God. It's what we're supposed to do. And, you know, even as far as the whole COVID issue, we were supposed to trust in God. You got these people out there who make fun of us Christians because we have these superstitious ordinances about washing our hands and making sure that you don't wear certain fabrics and all these sort of like, and quarantining. Well, the Lord has been telling us that from the beginning, giving us a common sense, cohesive perspective on how this is supposed to be handled. You got a disease, you're going to quarantine for 7 days. You're going to quarantine for 14 days. Outside of that, it's not practical anymore. And then from there, you don't quarantine everybody. That person is going to have to be quarantined. Yes, wash your hands. And now you got these people out there acting like a bunch of religious zealots looking at you sideways because you don't wash your hands when they were making fun of us for these superstitious practices that we had. So trusting in God was a good way to go in the first place. Even with the mask, if you're not wearing the right kind of fabrics, it's like, okay, you're going to shame me for the fabrics of my mask, but you were ridiculing God because he says don't mix fabrics because you can spread disease that way. And it's like, come on, man. We've been listening to the science. We've been listening to the all science, the omniscience himself. So in this, a lot of this stuff could have been avoided, Bill, because where the trust comes in is because the Christians get blamed for being a bunch of superstitious boobs. And then they throw the race card in there to make sure that you can't trust any of these Christians, because we've already made sure that the culture is conditioned to believe that you're a bunch of racists. And of course, if you're racist, you're obviously anti-science too. So you cannot be trusted. There's enough blame to go around, Bill, for why this became so problematic.
Let me just take a quick detour here for those people who aren't very religious and explain what to me this idea of "in God we trust" means. Mm-hmm. I believe that, I don't think there's any question that one of the reasons humans have been so successful is because essentially they're worry factories. That's what they do. Human beings manufacture worry. Mm-hmm. And the humans that worried the most about leopards coming into the cave were the ones that put a guard on the mouth of the cave at nighttime. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones that didn't get eaten by leopards, and all of the people who never doubted, never worried, are gone. They're out of the gene pool. Mm. And it's human nature to worry about things, and if there's nothing serious to worry about, we will elevate smaller things up to the level of maximal stress, because that's what we're built to do. It's a pro-survival trait, and it's built into us, and it's gotten us here. Mm-hmm. But to me, if you were to take the entire idea of God out of "in God we trust," what that is basically saying is simply this: have confidence that things will work out. Have confidence that the worst case scenario that you live in your head all the time, is not only not very likely, it's almost certainly not going to happen. The worst case scenario almost never happens. In fact, I can't think of a case when the worst case scenario happened. And for people who don't believe in God, that commandment to trust in God, you can interpret that if you choose, to say, okay, trust that things are not going to be as bleak as they seem to you, as just this little mote of dust in the air who cannot have any power over anything, who's just being blown around by the forces of the world. I'm going to die of COVID, I'm going to die of cancer, I'm going to die in a car crash, whatever. Mm. Trust that the mechanisms of survival that have gotten us here are the ones that are telling you that things are worse than they are. Have faith that they're not. And I think that is an enormous comfort to a lot of people. So I think that idea of "in God we trust" actually makes life a lot easier for people, even if you don't believe in God.
Sure, man. And you know, every organism that I can think of has like a survival directive. It's like, you know, and with that survival directive, there's a means to maintain its survival. And humans are our mechanism or our defense mechanism for that is our ingenuity. You know, we have ways to be able to say, okay, this can be a threat, and we can either choose to be consumed by the fear of the threat, or you could be proactive and not be so much of a worrier, but have a healthy concern to where it's like, okay, I want to be able to maintain my trust, and I trust this ingenuity that I'm blessed with to be able to come up with something, to be able to give a nominal degree of security for what it is that I'm trying to do, whether it's with, you know, my finances or our health or our relationships or whichever. We're blessed with the ability to be able to reason, to innovate things, to be able to do this. So yeah, once again, when the Lord says, yeah, you can trust me, hey, this is earth. This isn't heaven, right? This is earth. Crappy things are going to happen here. But I've given you what you need to be able to have some security, to be able to have a chance to deal with what the world throws at you. And if you cling to me, you can get to that place where these things won't be a threat to you anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, there's an awful lot to be said from somebody who, speaking as myself, somebody who suffered from this for a long time. Mm. There's an awful lot to be said to the point when you can just actually genuinely, instead of just lip service saying, just let it go, it's out of your hands. Mm. Worrying and making yourself sick about things is not going to change the outcome. Do what you can. Do what you can to get the best outcome you can. But when you get to the point of having done what you can, then let it go. You're worrying and make yourself sick over things is not going to change things. Yeah. So last item on this trust menu here, you know, politicians have been distrusted not just throughout American history, but throughout all of history. Every culture has distrusted their politicians. Mm-hmm. It goes back to Rome, and I'm sure it goes back to Egypt and Babylon. And I think the reason for that is generalizing, but it's a pretty good generalization, is that people who want to get into government, people who want to have control over other people's lives, want this very much. And usually those people are the kind of people who will say whatever they have to say in order to get into that office. And once they're in office, then they're as happy as can be. So generally speaking, again, just as a general rule of thumb, the kind of people that go into politics are intrinsically not very trustworthy people. If they were trustworthy people, they would keep their word. And if they kept their word, they wouldn't be elected. So the last thing I want to talk about specifically with the pandemic and Dr. Fauci and all the rest of this stuff. Once trust has been destroyed, it is extremely difficult to get it back. Very, very difficult to get trust back once you've destroyed trust. But it can be done. And I think the way I think the essential element to restoring trust is brutal honesty, especially if the honesty means that whatever you do or say reflects badly on yourself. For example, one form of breaking trust is having a great deal of credit and not being able to pay it back. They have trusted you with the money. You've spent it. Maybe you intended to pay it back. You almost certainly did. But in the end, you didn't. And so your credit rating suffers, and now people don't trust you. And what my experience has been, and what my experience with some close friends of mine have been, who've been in this situation, and certainly in the most prominent case, not of his own choosing. Somebody else screwed up his business, and the business went bankrupt. But what my friend did in that case was he had enormous numbers of creditors looking for six-figure, you know, restitution in many cases. And there was nothing left in the bank. And what my friend basically did was he immediately met with them one by one, went straight to their offices, sat down, looked them in the face, told them what happened, told them where he was financially, told them that he was going to be starting to make restitution immediately, even if that restitution was $10 a month on a $600,000 debt. And that over time, this was the plan to build the resources back up. And if they would simply bear with him, he would honor the commitments that had been made by other people and that they destroyed. And that is exactly what he did. That is exactly what he did. Turns out a windfall came in from a product they'd released earlier and a lot of money came back. Then the partners who had gone running from this confrontation came back and decided they wanted their piece of it. But that's not the point. The point is you can go to somebody who trusted you and whose trust you've betrayed, either intentionally or not, And through this brutal honesty of saying, this is what happened, this is the damage that's done, I'm responsible for the damage that's done, I mean to do everything in my power to repair that damage, and I'm asking you to give me a chance to do that, and I am beginning the process right now, even if it's a $5 bill, I am beginning the process of restoring your trust in me. My experience in life has been that kind of attitude is so astonishingly rare that people will fall over backwards and certainly, at the very least, give you a chance to get out of these troubles and regain their trust. But in order to do that, in order to go down that road in the first place, you have to be a fundamentally honest person. You have to be a fundamentally trustworthy person in order to have the tools necessary to rebuild trust that you may have lost for whatever reason.
Yeah, fundamentally honest person to be able to do that. And even honesty, sometimes even honesty isn't a redeemable thing, because you got people out there who will do things and say, hey man, at least I'm honest about it. You know, it's almost like the person, yeah. You know? So even honesty has a stigma attached to it sometimes. But but then there's people who live in truth, right? And I think a lot of these people out there, who are in the political realm, they don't live on a basis of truth. And you see a lot of these people that they can be very honest about who they are, but their honesty comes from a place that's not a place of truth. And I think a lot of people may understand where I'm coming from with that. But the thing is, to be able to communicate also, we always say we need to communicate, but you got people who can communicate very well, but not communicate honestly. And even by saying this, I feel like I'm raising more dirt than I'm helping to clean it up, because like, well, dang, so who can we actually trust? Because all these things can be used evil. You know, they can be used for evil. So, you know, with these politicians, you know, as the saying goes, their main objective is to get reelected. And, you know, these politicians, they don't come out of, you know, they're not born out of thin air, Bill. They're made in a culture just like the rest of them. They were educated.
And we vote for them.
And we vote for them. They represent us. And, you know, we're looking at them as our leaders. I don't look at them as our leaders. You know, I'm like, they're our representatives. And only if they recognize that they represent us, then I can say, okay, you're a leader. So it's like, but we have it like backwards. We're seeing them as our leaders first. And that is an example of, I think, trusting too much, as you were saying. Because when a person decides that they want to go in and be your leader, they already have their own agenda. I'm going to go in and I'm going to lead. These people need leadership and all that sort of stuff. Okay, who's? Your leadership? You have an idea? You have a plan for us? It's like, no, talk to me about going there to represent us. Talk to me about going there and maintaining these laws that we're supposed to have that make sure that our God-given freedoms stay in place. Now you got my ear. But when a person goes in there talking about they're going to lead us and stuff like that, a red flag goes up on me.
Yeah. And we see this in legends and movies an awful lot where you have the story of the good King Arthur, good King Alfred, whoever the good king is. And he's a young boy and he's got a mentor. These are universal stories. There's a wise man, a magician or a grandfather or something. And the good king, the young king, is told he's going to become king. And the first reaction of this good king is to say, I'm not worthy to be king. I have so many faults and flaws. How can I possibly be king? I don't deserve to be king. At which point the older, wiser person says, well, that's why you're qualified, because you have a fundamental humility about it. I know we're running long, but there's one last thing I do want to talk about, a specific point, because I think it's a really great point. You mentioned the serpent and an untrustworthy You mentioned that an untrustworthy person is often referred to as a snake, and that's true. But in the allegorical sense of the snake is never a character who immediately comes up and goes, the quality of the allegorical snake is that it possesses so much charm, so much rhetorical skill, so much of that silver. It's got such a silver tongue that you don't notice that the tongue is forked, right? That's basically it. It's so convincing. It's so casual. It lies so well. And on some level, that's actually something really to be careful of, to be doubtful of. That's the kind of thing that should actually lower your trust a little bit sometimes, is when somebody seems so smoothly trustworthy and honest and so on. If it's so effortless for them, you've got to ask yourself, you know, who's doing the talking through this snake here?
Indeed. And the interesting thing is, Bill, is that the Hebrew breakdown of the word snake in the Garden of Eden is actually a snake. It's a snake. And now, but this is that thing when you're talking about trusting too much, right? That overly trusting in itself can be unhealthy, and they put their faith in common because it's just like you said, you have these politicians who come to you as snakes, and they're obviously snakes. Obviously, right? But people trust in them. It's just like with John the Baptist. When the Pharisees came in, he says, look at you brood of vipers. He called them snakes. And it's like, these people trust you. And these people are whitewashed sepulchers. You're dead bones on the inside, but on the outside, you make yourselves look good. And even in the breakdown of the word snake in the garden, it also includes the word shining. Right. So, yeah, you're right.
Oh, that's interesting.
The killer thing about the Greek and the Hebrew words, they open up like a DNA code and you see the full connotations. You know, so when, just really quick, speaking of trust, when people talk about, well, you can't trust the word because there's so many translations. Bill, if we were to break the Bible down in every Hebraic breakdown of what the word opens up to, the Bible would be as tall as the healthcare bill. It's the Obamacare bill, right? It's good to have these different translations because it actually invites you to trust more, because now you get a three-dimensional view of everything that was said in there. So it invites you to trust even more. But like I said, to your point, you can look at these people and they've got all the trappings to make you look like you can trust them, even though it's so obvious that they're dangerous.
Yeah, that's an interesting point too. You could make the case that Hebrew and Greek are languages that are designed for human interaction and politics, that they're so deep in the area of human interaction, the Greek different kinds of love, obviously, you know, and eros and philos and all the rest of that stuff. So the short form, folks, is simply this. You know, if you elect a snake and he bites you, that's not the snake's fault. That's our fault. And I think recognizing where the fault is in terms of the quality of our politicians and our healthcare officials, which has reached an all-time low, certainly in my lifetime and maybe in the history of the country. The people that have gone on and destroyed our trust did it because we trusted them. And maybe we should be a little bit more careful about that going forward. For Alfonso Rachel, I'm Bill Whittle. Thanks for joining us here on the Virtue Signal. It's made possible by the new member drive that we had back in January and, of course, the longtime members that have been with us always. And we'll see you next time right here on the Virtue Signal.